It's Spoiler in Time, where we take the shows we've been watching because of all of our efforts to be able to watch television the way we want and talk about them. On this episode, we will talk about season 6 of Justified, episode 12, episode 2 of Preacher, season 2, and the movie Okja on Netflix. But first, I must introduce myself. How rude. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Brian Brushwood. And got to tell you, man, I got things to say. Can we talk through the any big surprises in the first round of our selection? For those of you guys who don't know, we're trying to pick what our next legacy program will be to watch. This is a program that hopefully has already completed its run, but that we will watch and share with you our feelings on as we go through it. Hannibal versus Babylon 5. I'm not shocked
that Babylon 5 won. I am shocked how much it won by, because the biggest margin. So many people have told me we have to watch Hannibal.
Biggest margin and the biggest full stop total of votes for any one property.
Yeah. And I think it's the first. It might. Well, no, actually, it may be the last one on the list. So that's even more surprising as you scroll through. But yeah, I know Babylon 5 is very popular amongst people, so that shouldn't surprise me. It's just that margin. Firefly versus Stargate SG-1 doesn't surprise me at all. That's pretty much exactly what I thought.
Yeah, no, that sounds Firefly right to one. Me. Keep in mind, Firefly has a tactical benefit in that a Firefly sojourn for us will only be 2 months long, as opposed to Babylon 5, which means that's the last one that we listen or watch ever. You'll only hear us talk about it that forever.
Yeah. Now, the NCAA tournament, upon which this is somewhat modeled, often will take people from, say, the East Coast and put them in the Western Regional, right? Because they're like, we just have too many East Coast teams. We'll stick them over there. So that's kind of what I was mimicking when I put Hannibal in the sci-fi sectional. But it's funny is that we didn't get any of the outliers from their particular sectionals to show up. The sci-fi sectionals, two sci-fi shows. And the period piece sectional is Deadwood versus Black Sails. Deadwood smashing Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, here's what I suspect is that Peaky Blinders is less known among our largely, North American audience. And also, Peaky Blinders is still going on, whereas Deadwood definitely, maybe it's got a little bit of that Firefly effect.
Yeah, and we have avoided that question of what do we do if we should just make it a firmer rule next time that we're just not going to put anything.
I'm fine with watching something to get caught up on it. Like, let's say what if the next Battlestar Galactica was on its second season? Like, if somebody reached out to us about Preacher right now, and so many people were like, no, you got to watch Preacher. Like, we would make the pledge to get caught up on Preacher.
I think that's a different thing. Well, we can talk about that later. Okay. I feel like it's just safer. As our because on our service level agreement, there's always this one, right?
Sure.
And it's safer to have one where, like, we know where they all are. They're all in the bag.
Yeah.
And of course, Black Sails outdistancing Terriers. This was actually fairly close, 274 to 168 relative to some of the others. I guess just a little.
So here's the thing: Black Sails has tangible current fans because it's still on the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Terriers had folks who saw it in passing and tell the legend of how good Terriers is and why I should watch it. So it would make sense that the vote would not benefit Terriers, but there's part of me that maybe I'll sneak off and watch Terriers on my own.
Yeah, and there's no reason we can't. For the sci-fi sectional, Babylon 5 versus Firefly, I mean, I think we pretty much made our feelings clear last episode.
Hold on. No.
Not clear enough, Tom.
I
would root for Firefly.
Let me make it real clear that I would love to revisit Firefly. I would not be thrilled if the next 5 years of my life was dedicated to becoming a whipping boy for Babylon 5.
Now, Deadwood and Black Sails both have problems, right? Like you said, Black Sails still making episodes. Deadwood not still making episodes is their problem because it didn't finish the story.
I'm going to go with either one because what I saw of Deadwood, I deeply loved. Also, Raylan's in Deadwood, right?
Right,
so
right.
Part of me thinks that would be real fun to just get more Raylan.
Oliphant to Oliphant.
Right. Yeah. Black Sails still on the air.
Oh, Dark Redeemer says Black Sails is done.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if it's done, then that simplifies things. I'm good with either of those, to be honest.
honestly, knowing that Black Sails just finished its last season, which is apparently what folks in the chat are saying, I could go either way. I would have tipped towards Deadwood because I started watching it and I never finished. I didn't even get to the end of what has been made, and I would like to see more of those. And like you say, the Oliphant connection would be kind of fun. But if Black Sails is done, that looks intriguing too. So that one is user's choice. They're all user's choice, obviously.
Well, all of this is available to you if you go to patreon.com/cordkillers. Keep in mind, you do have to have a membership at patreon.com.
It
doesn't cost you nothing. But basically, think Patreon is working really hard to become a social network of its own. They want to take on in some way Twitter and Facebook and so on. So it's like, if you're thinking about it, just get yourself an account on Patreon, and don't think that means you automatically have to spend money on nothing.
All right, let's talk about the summer movie draft.
Have you won yet, Tom? Hey,
no,
Tom,
starting to look closer. Wonder Woman, now the highest grossing DCEU movie at $346 million and is still bringing in money, to the point that right now, Team DTNS, $686 million versus Big and Tall, $192 million. They have to make pretty much, what, $400, $500 million
That's not
to beat
happen.
Me.
Look at you.
$250 million each. And that means Spider-Man Homecoming, which very easily could hit $300 million. War for Planet of the Apes has to get there, too.
Yeah, no.
And that's just
will not happen.
A tall order.
Neither one
of them are possible. I think it's all on War for the Planet of the Apes. That's the one that makes or breaks Team Big and Tall.
I mean, that's fine if you care about which team makes it or whatever. Keep in mind, you still have Atomic Blonde in your back pocket. And by the way, it was a throwaway at $6 of game money. But the more of these ads I'm seeing, the more I think that you're just going to get the double middle finger FU to the top by not only having rightly bet heavily on Wonder Woman when nobody else did and that working out, but I think Atomic Blonde's going to make money too.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to make triple digits, though. I feel like that's an $80 million where, oh, it could have been a $50 million, but now it's...
Okay, but
like
let's say you got it today. That would take you from 686 to 750-something.
Yeah.
I can't math. I mean, it's like the point is it's going to be a lot. You're going to win by a lot.
Now, the June 30th episodes, we don't see any numbers for Wish Upon, so I don't know if that is just trailing indicator or it got moved. But the house for Team Cordkillers brought in $9 million, so that's not going to do much for them. Despicable Me 3 led the weekend, and it brought in a respectable $75 million. But again, it's going to be that's just going to be stuff in the bank for them.
To put it in perspective, they spent about the same amount you spent for Wonder Woman. And you did a little bit better than $75 million opening weekend.
They spent more for Despicable Me 3.
Whoops. Yeah.
Wonder Woman is the best buy so far. Boss Baby is now the number two best buy. The number three best buy is Captain Underpants.
Yeah. My daughter tried to get me to go see that movie.
Yeah. She should really keep trying.
Yeah.
Actually, all the daughters.
We're going to go see Spider-Man, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Sorry. And it's worth seeing for sure. So, yeah, I think we'll know by the end of the July 14th week, so by July 21st, where this is heading. I think we'll have an indication.
I think Dark Tower is going to usurp all your expectations.
It's going to make $600 million.
Frog Pants will be amazed.
All right, let's get to the triage. We got a piece of feedback from Scott M., who says, look, I believe it was me you mentioned on Cord Killers 176, and I thought I'd give you my experience and a little background on Babylon 5. I did not care for the first season that much and almost stopped watching it. However, I kept going on, and to my surprise, each season got better and better and better as they worked out the characters and storylines. Eventually, when they ended the series at 5 seasons, I was sad because it really matured into a terrific series. So be patient. The rewards will be coming. And read this article from avclub.com. Thanks, Scott in Rochester, New York. Why you gotta be like that? Scott's just trying to help you out.
Look, Ryan? Man, the Gear Wars weren't really about the gears. I get it. I get it. It's great. It's great. It's great. It's
all
great.
Right. Let's start talking about Okja, which I started watching on the plane yesterday after being away from my dogs all weekend, and it hurt my heart to be watching this little girl and her pig and not being able to just rush over and hug my dogs. I finished it this afternoon petting my dogs as I watched it.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a finely crafted movie where things are set up and knocked down in very satisfying ways. And they do a good job of putting your character in a very obviously no-win situation and then having her get out of the no-win situation, but not in an unbelievable way.
Well, and not in a wholly satisfying way either. One of the things – I watched the beginning of this movie like three times because it was so instantly enchanting to me. This yes, the construct of – let's fight global warming with a genetically engineered super pig that happens to be and the fact that the first act, they go out of their way to establish that Okja has human level intelligence. You know, she essentially plays a game of cut the rope in order to save the life of her human counterpart or whatever. I was really puzzled the entire first third of this movie, why everybody just goes out of their way to just drop random F-bombs, because they're not fueled by anger or frustration. They're not invectives? Invectives?
Invective? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
They're not meant with hate in your heart. They're not meant to be salacious. They just randomly pepper the F-bomb throughout. And it's as though, as best I could figure, it's like they need to telegraph way early on that this movie will end with a very disturbing scene where you're going to see a very accurate telling of the process of industrialized meat processing. And the way to do that was, let's just drop random F-bombs. Even though we have an adorable little girl, an awesome computer animated, super intelligent, awesome rhino pig thing. And the other thing that really stuck out to me was how weird it is that, forgive me, I'm going to use some language here, everybody is a dipshit in this movie except for the girl and the pig. Every single character is flawed and dumb and bad at some level in the movie except for the girl and the pig. And the girl is very simple. She's like, I'm just going to get the pig. I'm here to get the pig. You guys stole the pig? I'm going to get the pig back. I'll do whatever it takes. And the pig is like, I love the girl. I don't understand what all this crap is. This is all dumb. I love the girl. And everybody else says they want one thing, but reveals that they are either incapable of achieving that thing or that they're flawed or fish out of water. It was weird to realize that the Animal Liberation Front, the ALF, like, you know, they were so actively portrayed as clowns in the beginning of it that I was like, I was like, okay, well, these can't be our heroes. And then in the end of the movie, I'm like, oh, I guess they're our heroes, the clowns. Okay, go clowns.
Go clowns. Yeah, team clown. I took the cursing, especially at the beginning scene, as John Legere, right? Why does he curse on stage when he does a T-Mobile keynote, right? He's showing what a rebel he is. And she was very much trying to show, like, I am the rebel. My father had flaws and my sister had flaws and I've come in and disrupted this. It just felt to me like they were trying to take pieces of all the tech CEOs that show their disruption and put them into her speech.
I don't doubt that that's part of it, but I know for me, I perceive that as the barrier. And by the way, here's the funny part. I don't know what the rating is on this. I don't know if it has a rating. Does it have a rating?
I didn't pay attention. I'm sure it does.
Like, but in this case, like, does it matter? Does Netflix need ratings for any of their things, right?
It's rated TVMA, sourced from IMDb.
Okay, so yeah, that seems about right.
That's still a lot of – on TV, you wouldn't get this many F-bombs on TVMA.
Correct. Not even on a premium channel. I don't know. Maybe on Deadwood, which we'll find out. If you vote for Deadwood, please vote for Deadwood.
That didn't even register for me, to be honest. That didn't stick with me. What stuck with me was the personality, like you were saying, that they went out of their way to show that this little girl and this pig had a connection. And whether it's human level or intelligence, or whether it's just this pig obviously knows who the girl is and has enough of a connection to want to risk its own life to save hers, and it's got enough intelligence to, like you say, play cut the rope. That's such a perfect way to describe that scene, that you're instantly bonded. You're like, okay, I get it. Yeah, I want this pig to survive. I do not want this pig to become food. And I want, you know, the little girl to win. And like you say, there's the girl is the only character, well, and the pig, Okja and the girl are the only ones without flaws. The pig, you don't expect animal characters to have many flaws. The little girl character is able to not have flaws without being seen as perfect, without being seen as a little princess. She's not a Mary Sue character because, you know, she has a temper and she cries and all of that. But those aren't flaws per se. They're just human traits.
Right. Whereas every other person that we see is short-sighted and or incapable of a bunch of different things. I don't know. It was fascinating.
The leader of the ALF was the closest to being a true character, holding to his principles until the point where he just starts kicking the crap out of the guy who just admitted he lied. He just admitted the truth. And this guy who's been saying, like, no, we do not hurt people. We are very principled people, starts beating someone up because, but the one time you cross our
ethics. I think that was intentional. The director who did this did Snowpiercer, which mm-hmm. when I first saw it, because it was released day and date both on Netflix and on movie theaters, I perceived that to mean it was a lower budget, lower quality thing. And when I watched it, it's a very strange action adventure where Captain America lives on a literal crazy train circling around the planet forever, right? Then I started watching some of the breakdowns of the cinematography and the direction decisions that were made, and really clever things come in there. For example, the fact that Captain America is constantly looking forward or backward. You only see the front of his face or the back of his face, and that the only two characters, minor spoilers, a.k.a. the end of Snowpiercer, that are looking sideways, perpendicular to the framing, are the ones who want off the train altogether. And once I saw that, I was like, oh, no, wait. Whoever directed this did a really clever job figuring out a lot of stuff. I feel like I already like Okja. I think as I see some of the more in-depth dives into what's brilliant about it come through, I think I'm going to love it all the more. I would love to know the stories of the character design. There was somebody who said that they took a peek at Okja and felt like it just looked too cartoonish and they couldn't get into it. I'm going to say don't let that get in the way. I was shocked at how adult, nuanced, developed, and flawed what otherwise might be a Miyazaki film. But even as I say that, I'm like, no, a Miyazaki film is adult, developed, flawed, and all those things. You know, I mean, it's like I don't know. It's wonderful. Also, screenplay was written by John Ronson. That's John Ronson, the guy who wrote The Psychopath Test and The Men Who Stare at Goats and some other brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I liked a lot of the little bits in here, too. One that I'm not sure if it was intentional or just me bringing in my own experience is when they're in Seoul and they have a chase scene through this little underground mall with the big pig. I've been in there, and that place is incredibly claustrophobic.
And it felt that way?
Yeah, and the shooting of that showed that, and I was like, yeah, man, I felt that same panic that Okja's feeling right now, just walking through there, trying to make my way through, and having this giant pig trapped in there would be crazy. But I think even more generally acceptable or identifiable to people is things like, I know you said they were clowns, but I loved the fact that they're like, we are not terrorists. We do not want to harm people. We are the peaceful revolution, to the point that they even open the umbrellas to deflect the darts. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're just taking all of the principles of the polite revolution from Hong Kong right down to the umbrellas, the umbrella revolution, where they were like the polite protesters and saying, okay, what if that same ethos that happened in Hong Kong was put behind this animal liberation front?
Yeah, I got to tell you, there are flaws with it, and I think their biggest difficulty is in the marketing. How do you market something as challenging as this? Because on the surface, it just screamed – like all I wanted to do was show it to my daughters, and both my my 4-year-old and my 9-year-old watched it. Although by the time we got to the end –
That's why those F-bombs stood out to you. I get that now because you're like, hey, I want to – oh.
I want to share – well, I did share this with them. And in fact, I full on – I covered their eyes during the graphic slaughtering depiction. And then like, you know, even after covering their eyes, my 4-year-old is like, yeah, but that's not real, right, Dad? And I was like, you like bacon, kid?
I mean, not like that. Yeah. The pigs aren't giant.
No, they're not that big. But I think that there are challenging ideas at the end of this, and I'm still very conflicted about whether or not we're even going to let or encourage my 13-year-old to see it, because she's already somebody with a strong sense of justice who's wrestling with these issues. You could make a case that is kind of propagandized one side or the other on this.
Yeah, I didn't even mind that. I don't agree with the message of this movie in some ways. In some ways I do, in some ways I don't.
But agreed.
It did not stop my enjoyment of the movie.
Well, and that's the funny part is for, you know, depending on what your beliefs are, weirdly, as much as they're portrayed as the bad guys, the company that develops the super pig, invents new life, is doing it for all the right reasons, is because humans love meat and we need meat that doesn't corrupt the atmosphere to the extent and, you know, cause minimal suffering and blah, 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 and all that stuff. It's a complicated, complex movie that has sat with me for a very long time, and I've really, really enjoyed that.
Am I remembering this wrong, or does the uncle make chicken at some point?
There's a chicken.
I know they make fish.
No, that's her favorite. It's fish stew. That's why she wants
to. There's fish stew, but doesn't he also make chicken?
The night that she leaves, he makes chicken stew her favorite.
I thought it was fish stew her favorite.
Fish stew
is what he makes the first time she comes back.
Oh, yeah, two stews. Got it.
Huh. Anyway, I'd say go watch it.
Yeah, how good is it?
I didn't think about it when I was watching it on my scale.
I thought it was great. I thought it was really great, and all the things I didn't like, I'm willing to inherently decide are my fault somehow.
I think it's great. I think it's great on my scale.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah. I think it's hard because I did watch it in broken pieces, and usually I did too.
And in fact, I believe there's like a 3-minute chunk in the middle of some chase scene that I got pulled away. So, So I can't claim
that's where the chicken stew was.
Yeah, of course it was. you watched it as well, Bryce. Is anything we're saying ringing true for you? Or
yeah, I mean, I think. Going back to what you were saying earlier about Okja feeling like a cartoony figure, Okja is not the reason that this movie is cartoony. It's because it is written incredibly.
Okja turns out is the most believable character in the bunch.
there is an anime feel to some of the characters in the dialogue, especially.
It really
in the
does feel strangely like if a Miyazaki film could drop F-bombs constantly. Yeah. I feel like it would be Okja.
It's incredibly whimsical. Especially for a movie that is supposed to be very current day, if you just think of the very subtle uses of technology, the extravagance of, you know, that huge parade or not even a parade, just that big celebration in the middle of New York at the end of the movie, you know, the crashing through the shopping mall. There's a lot that is goofy and exaggerated, which is why you would think it is a kids movie,
right?
You know, why you would think, you know, this is very much something that a child would see and could respond to the exaggerated elements of it, but it definitely isn't. I think that's a function of the story being very middle road, right? Like we talked about the ALF being sort of the heroes, but at the end of the day they were how the young girl gets Okja back, but even at the end, she goes to save Okja and not.
Well, and that's the other thing is that ending scene where it's very clearly human level intelligence creatures in a concentration camp where they're sending their kid. It's like, just run, just go, please take my baby. Like, I mean, it's like heavy, heavy, dark stuff. But hey, kid, you got your friend back. You know, that was a very challenging end. And if the cost for that. I can almost see the calculus where it's like, look, we want to end the movie this way. It's dark and complicated and it's going to upset people. But you can't do that because so many kids are going to see the end. It's like, great, let's eliminate the kids. Let's just throw F-bombs throughout to keep them away.
And so that's a weird contrast of like a very kid-friendly style, but definitely a more nuanced ending. Also very weird. We talked about this a little bit when we talked about it the other day of like, oh, the gold pig saved the day. He could have probably just bought Okja in the first place.
Although I was thinking about that and truthfully, what I'd hate to say is that the market value of Okja declined significantly once she had fulfilled her obligations as a media investment. Uh-huh. And then at that point, yeah, you could just trade a gold pig for
Okja wasn't for sale. But he could. The uncle couldn't buy her.
Right. Correct.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he tried. Though.
And
I
it wasn't
think,
until the sister, till Nancy took over, who'll make a deal with anyone. Right. That's her.
Which, by the way, that was kind of a weird story twist where it's like, okay, we're gonna have one character who suddenly flips the switch and becomes super evil halfway through. How do we do it? Let's have twins. And then the one actor steps in and the other one takes over.
Again, I think there's a little more depth than you're giving her credit for on that character, because a super evil one would have just not sold the pig to frustrate the little girl's dreams and aspirations.
Sure.
But Nancy is eminently ethical. You just, it's not maybe your ethics, but she's like, well, if you've got the gold, in fact, this will pay for more than the pig. Make sure she gets home safely.
And, and she frames it as, this is our first Okja, or their first super pig that we ever sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which means that they'll sell more, which is what you could expect them to do, which is a very business way, not necessarily chaotic evil.
Which, by the way, there was a very interesting moment. We went and saw the manatees migrating, which those numbers are rebounding and doing better and better. We went again with the family and, talking to some of the local and the guides where it's like, yeah, man, it's getting, so much. This is the biggest we've ever had or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly was like, well, hopefully there'll be so many. We start selling manatee steaks. And there's that weird moment when you realize that's a pretty solid business strategy to make sure there's lots of manatees is, it's weird because like we now live in a world, the Okja world, this is where a company for purposes that benefit all of mankind to reduce global emissions, to feed the number of people with the most delicious foods, create a new species that is lovely and intelligent and wonderful and deserves to exist, but only exists inside. These are the complicated thoughts that I love about this movie. It's a good movie. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the second episode of Preacher, or the second part of the premiere of Preacher in season two, which is a road trip. This is the road trip. This is them on the road trying to ping pong away from the guy who's hunting them and getting a friend killed in the process, I guess.
Well, I don't even know if they did it or not.
I mean, no, they didn't do it, but they certainly led him to his door, not intentionally.
Sure. Okay. So elements we have the reemergement of one of the two angels from the first season, right?
Right. We find him as a Vegas act, using the fact that he can come back from the dead, and then finally wishing for death in the end, which I found poignant, actually. I kind of was hoping that character would still be around the rest of the season.
Well, and who's to say, right? In a show like Preacher, anything goes. The standouts for me, the single standout of everything was Cassidy saying, oh, no, I can fix this. I got this. Give me 3.5 hours. And then in 3.5 hours, you see a male bromance, possibly more than that, emerge in that he actively seduces the angel into.
I mean, it's a Hunter S. Thompson scene, right? Like, it's in Vegas. They're doing all of the craziest things they can think of, trashing the room, doing drugs. And you're like, yeah, how can he not end up coming out of that loving Cassidy?
Well, and plus also, I loved Cassidy watching.
Yes.
And I loved their friendship and possibly more that's happening. And I loved the ambiguity that they had of that moment where there's like, oh, you got a little something on that, you know, this moment of touching faces of, you know, that often is a pregnant moment right before some big realization. I love the fact that they left all of that unresolved, and all that mattered is that Cassidy promised he would get the guy. And then when he asked him, like, what did you do? He's like, oh, I don't know. I just felt like he needed somebody to listen to him, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's just like, essentially, I don't know. There was something delightful and light about that whole thing. Bryce, hey, are you watching Preacher?
No, not yet.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'm still catching up. I'm still trying to catch up.
Okay.
Now, the other major plot line that happens in the hotel is getting married. And then the introduction of the backstory of Ruth Negga's character, where she's been running away from some responsibilities, and that makes her think twice about getting married.
Yeah, Tulip is not thrilled when she sees elements of her past showing up. I love, all of the acting is so, so good. Those three characters, those three archetypes, Cassidy, Tulip, and who's Preacher? What's his name?
Preacher.
Yeah, Preacher. It's wonderful. I love the fact that Preacher's feeling it. He's like, man, we're gonna get married. And it pans over to some, you know, doughy male patter baldness guy's like, yeah, we all are. That's why we're in line.
That's why we have these paddles.
Yes,
that will hum when it's our turn. Like we're at a Bennigan's.
It was great. What do you think this means in terms of the Saint of Killers? Saint of Killers shows up, and he's ostensibly been hired by the Angel to get them, but also Cassidy does his job of convincing the Angel to call him off, and you're left with what I thought was a fairly ambiguous ending in that, you know, he gets killed by the Saint of Killers, but it's not entirely clear whether or not Saint of Killers intends to respect his boss's final request to leave him alone or not.
Oh, did he? I thought his boss reneged and said they're going to New Orleans and now kill me.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you know what? Is that his execution of Jesse, that's his name. Jesse's final request of find peace. Do you think,
yes.
Do you think they had an agreement that he was going to let him go?
No, but I think he was fully going to respect Cassidy. And then when Jesse pulled,
he said, find
the voice on him, he's like, oh, well, the way I can find peace is to have the Saint of Killers kill me. And so to get the Saint of Killers to kill me, I'll tell him where they went.
I feel dumb that was not inherently instantly obvious. And it took me the next day to realize that. That's fantastic. I do love the surreality of turning such a grim affair as multiple murder into an act. But then again, I really loved The Prestige. Spoilers, hello!
I've never seen The Prestige, actually, so that means nothing to me. Yeah, it doesn't spoil anything.
Tom, can we just randomly watch The Prestige by next week?
There's so many things.
This one's worth it. This one's worth it.
Look at
it.
They all are. Yeah, I'm sure.
Come on. Right. I'm going to call you. I'm gonna try
at some point, at some point when you're here, and if you say Prestige and we have the time, I will definitely watch it with you.
I'm going to get on a plane right now.
That'd be awesome, actually, because I got all day off tomorrow. So I'm kind of ready for act two of this. Not that the first two episodes are an entire act, but I'm like, all right, Saint of Killers still on their trail. They're in New Orleans. You know, what's our next event? What's the next stop on a road trip? And I'm kind of cool thinking that that's what this season is going to be, is not a typical arc of a plot, but a series of stops along the road. It's more of a journey plot.
So can we talk about the challenge of writing a love triangle? It seems as though I think they've done a really good job. I can't speak for the comic book, but I'll say on the television show. The television show, they've created a really interesting dynamic in that there's this male-male, very powerful bromance between Cassidy and Jesse. You have the actual long-term romance of Jesse and Tulip. Tulip and Cassidy have the one-time hookup that's much more recent. But also, with this last episode, they've kind of sewn in – this androgynous aspect to Cassidy, in that he's almost a forgive me for saying an emotional vampire, where it's like, you know, he was able to bond with someone else, to where they've done a really good job of setting up three poles where all three emotional connections are strong. There's some kind of passionate connection that mm-hmm. they're burying between the surface or beneath the surface of Cassidy and Tulip. Tulip and Jesse are the, you know, the old married couple in kind of some way, and Jesse and Cassidy get along so well. I don't know. I think they've done just a masterful job of messing with that.
Yeah, I don't know if androgynous is the right word or not, but he's definitely asexual.
There's a strong. There's a strong.
Because androgynous implies no sex,
yeah.
no gender. But I know what you're getting at, which is like he's the gateway, so to speak.
Well, here's what it is Jesse needs Tulip and Tulip needs Jesse. Both of them love Cassidy because Cassidy doesn't need either one of them. Right.
Yeah. That's it.
I think that's what it is. I think that's the dynamic that I'm really attracted to.
All right, let's move on to Justified, episode 12, season 6. And I should have been doing this all 6 seasons that we've been watching, but I'm going to look at the previously on to remind me of the things that happened.
No help there. No help there, Tom.
Because the important parts are Raylan is after Ava. Art is after Raylan. Boyd is after Ava. And what's his face? Now I can't remember the who's after Loretta? Avery is after Loretta, so that's going to be important, is that Loretta seems to have squeezed out a deal with Avery. You're rubbing your face as if you're in pain, Brian. What's wrong?
I really am, because at this point the Justified at this moment is at its most. By which I mean some toddler has cranked the contrast up to 11. So the things it does well, it does the best it's ever done. And the things it doesn't do well, you don't even exist. The acting from every person is fantastic. The dialogue from every person is fantastic. Each of them relying on their own individual superpower is fantastic. It's fascinating. The world building is fantastic. The set design, the blah, 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 all of that fantastic. It also is so utterly silly at this point. It's as though everybody looked at a menu of things they would want to see in a Justified episode and said, well, isn't there a way to get all of them? And so as a result, you've got Boyd and Raylan talking at night as they shoot at each other in the dark of night about their fates. You've got deals between Avery Markham and a 14-year-old girl. You've got the answer is yes. Yes to everything. Yes to all of it. Somebody blows himself up right in front of Boyd, who had been shot a scant 48 hours previously, and he just looks up and pats his chest and be like, oh, I guess I'm okay. Also, I'm a religious cult bandit icon that people half worship in this area. Another thing they can't resist doing on the show is constantly writing in new characters. So we get to get introduced to yet another character. There's 2 episodes left in the whole show. By all means, take 15 minutes at a campground with Raylan and some dude with a beard talking about their past tussles.
We've seen him before.
I'm sure we have, man, but I didn't check no Wikipedia before watching this.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Carry on.
I'm just saying. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot.
This is not to diminish your satiation, your overfilling. But if you liked all of this stuff, this is exactly what you want from the penultimate episode of a series, which is give me all my favorite things. Yes. So what is different about this? Is it that they're just not playing well together? Like, because that is the description of the perfect ending of a series, is they brought in all of the stuff that they do well and
so
and,
okay,
and
so here's
made
what
it
happens.
All work together towards the ending.
When you crank up the contrast on anything, the whatever algorithm is filtering.
Okay,
it.
So that's your problem. It's not that they're there. You think they're exaggerated. You think that they're extreme.
Correct. And what happens is if there's a pixel somewhere in between, you know, in a fat gray area, and as you go to black and white, at some point that pixel has to be either black or white, right? And so we get kind of these to me ridiculous, unbelievable artifacts like art suddenly talking as though Raylan truly is an outlaw that needs to be taken down or whatever. And it's like, that is an ill-fitting, technically, yes. Once you crank up the contrast, that's the side art the character has to be on. But
although
it looks
art is
ridiculous.
Also the one who tells them, the attorney has finally, had lost his patience with Raylan, and he's going to the FBI. We need to get Raylan before they do. Raylan's side.
Right. And the attorney is a cartoon at this point. He might as well be Yosemite Sam. It's just that anytime you crank up the contrast, stuff looks very unrealistic or farther from realism than I would like. Whereas, the Shield, everything was heightened, but it was not as cartoonishly black and white as I feel like we're being wedged into now with Justified.
So we end up here at the end of this with Boyd in the wind still, Raylan in custody, Ava in custody of Avery's corrupt cops, I guess what I'm getting at is, you haven't talked about much about what happened because you're so bothered by the way it happened. Are you still interested in what happens next?
We've talked about this before. At this point, the entire show is made of rubber, and I'm interested to see where it ends up, but I'm not overly – like literally any character could die next episode, and I suspect I'll not shed a tear for it because it's very hard to cry for a rubber band.
So vote Firefly, folks. I'm just saying.
Get ready for 5 years of this. My five-year mission.
Well, that is it for this episode of Spoiler Time. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us and talking shows. And we just do this because we like watching shows. And sometimes we like the shows. Sometimes we don't like them. Sometimes we still like them and criticize them. And that's what it's all about. So if you like what we're doing here, thanks for supporting us at patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll see you next week.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.